You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. The election and inauguration of a new governor in California left some lingering questions about water in California. In particular, one of the big projects of former Governor Jerry Brown, the Delta Tunnels Project. And that's one of the topics that we're going to discuss today. Water is the topic of a lecture this week at University of the Pacific, presented by water expert Stephen McCaffrey. We'll post details about the lecture event this Thursday night on our website. In the studio with me to explore California water issues, and also we're going to ask some of these questions related to the tunnels. Dr. McCaffrey himself is here, distinguished law professor, a 2017 Stockton Water Prize laureate, and the Carol Olson Endowed Professor of International Law. Thank you so much for making the trip.
It's a great pleasure.
I'm not going to focus all on the Delta Tunnels, so please
That's all right. That's all right. They involve water.
Mary Kay Camarillo is here. She's Associate Professor of Civil Engineering at University of the Pacific, and I'm sure has the student's perspective as well.
Absolutely.
Glad to have you here, Professor.
Thank you.
So let's raise that point, though. New governor in office, what happens to the former governor's passion project, because he hates the word legacy, and does it have fans as big as the past governor was?
That's a really good question. I, of course, focus on international issues, but there are efforts to move water in other parts of the world that, in a way, mimic our very large water projects in California, the State Water Project and the Central Valley Project, which is federal, moving water some 400 miles from where it is to where people live. The tunnels would go under the Delta. I'm not an expert on them, but I think most people know about that. I'm suspicious of those kinds of things, of meddling too much with nature. We're already meddling a lot with it. And so I frankly wonder whether this is the best way to serve the needs that there are, both in the Valley and in the Los Angeles metropolitan area.
You raise the perspective, though, of looking at this question globally and what people are doing from an infrastructure standpoint globally with water. Professor Camarillo, do you have something to add there just in the idea of what we can build to move water that in and of itself is a power far greater than anything we could possibly construct?
Absolutely. In California, our water system is so integrated. So you have a situation where people in some parts of the state, like in Southern California, are relying on a water supply that's, people here locally in the Central Valley are stewards of that water. And we're kind of responsible for that water and keeping it in a good state. And so we just can't be in a situation where we're not thinking holistically about water. We have to think about the whole system. And I think it's really important for my students who are going out into the world and building these water projects to think about what's the big perspective? What's the impact we're going to have locally, but then also on people living in other parts of the state? So in California, water is important and is something that we have to think about as a whole.
Dr. McCaffrey, what to you is our wisest view of water, from it being a commodity, a saleable, tradable commodity, to it being a human right, where I know you look at law as the frame, as necessary for human life, and therefore something that every person on this earth has a right to.
Do we have a couple of hours?
Can you condense that into about a 4-minute lecture?
Oh, sure. Well, water moves. Much of the water on Earth moves through the hydrologic cycle, and I think everyone learns about that in grammar school. Evaporation from the sea largely, falling as precipitation, either in the form of rain or snow, filling rivers, which in turn flow to the sea. So water is kind of quintessentially a shared natural resource. We're sharing it. Everyone shares it. So in that sense, it's also a quintessential international resource. We see the same thing playing out in California. Water falls as rain or snow in the Sierras. May stay there for a while, probably not so long now with climate change, but it flows down into the rivers, and Sacramento River takes it down to the Delta and so forth, and that's where the earlier discussion takes off from.
You just gave us the poetic, purest picture that is rife with politics and confrontation and even war in some places.
Exactly, yeah. And another thing that leads to conflict is precisely this kind of project. You have Muammar Gaddafi's great man-made river, which is formed of pipes big enough to drive a truck through that are filled with water from the southern part of Libya. And that water comes from a deep aquifer that's shared with, I think, four other countries. So they're pumping water out from this deep aquifer into this enormous pipe and conveying it north to the Mediterranean. If that's not a recipe for conflict, when they draw down that aquifer to a place where the neighboring countries can't afford to get it because they don't have the energy from oil that Libya has, that is going to breed conflict, I think, in the future. Israel takes water out of the Sea of Galilee through its national water carrier. The Sea of Galilee is fed by tributaries of the Jordan River. And so that also means that very little water comes out of the Sea of Galilee and flows back into the Jordan River below the Sea of Galilee. So Jordan relies on that. The Palestinians rely on that. And you, again, have a recipe for conflict. So when you move water, you're kind of setting up a potential conflict.
Just the act of moving it.
Either with, other parts of the state in California or other countries.
Where is California in its struggles over water compared to the rest of the world? Where are we on the spectrum of all countries that are interfering, I guess, with nature's natural flow? Is that where it all begins, when somehow we change nature's flow on its own?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, we're one state, and we are a democracy. The fact that most of the votes seem to be in the southern part of the state may be responsible in part for the fact that we're moving so much water down there. So on the spectrum, I mean, we have had political conflicts over our water projects, but they've been managed and presumably will stay manageable. However, the more you subscribe to a philosophy that we need to get more water down there because the population is likely to grow, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. The population will grow. So maybe a Northern Californian, I was born and raised in Northern California, would take a different perspective and say, look, they should limit their growth to not only the naturally occurring water, which would make Los Angeles a town of, I don't know, a couple hundred thousand, I guess, but a reasonable amount, perhaps, from the northern part of the state.
You're listening to Dr. Stephen McCaffrey. He will be presenting a lecture this week at University of the Pacific. It is open to the public. We will post a link so that you can attend if you'd like to this Thursday night. Also in the studio with me is Mary Kay Camarillo, Associate Professor of Civil Engineering at University of the Pacific. Where are students in their forward thinking about water, and how much of the responsibility for what happens in the future will land on them in this time of climate change?
Yeah, that's something I was thinking about as Professor McCaffrey was answering the last question. I think one thing that's missing with young people is an awareness of water. And so sometimes, for example, I have a lot of K through 12 kids come in to the university and I talk to them and give a presentation. And a lot of times we'll go and the Calaveras River runs through our campus. So we'll go walk to the Calaveras and drop a bucket down and get a sample of water and take it back to the lab and do some things. And it's kind of amazing how little awareness some kids have of water. So I ask them questions like, what are the main two rivers in California? And, you know, and we talk about the Delta and how important it is. And I always ask them, how many people do you think drink this water? You know, this Calaveras River is running through our campus. It's joining the San Joaquin River and feeding the Delta. And that water is providing a water supply for a lot of our state. And they're really shocked when I tell them how many people drink that water.
And I don't even have a guess. How many?
It's about 25 million.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, in a state of 40 million, almost 40 million,
yeah.
Of course.
And another thing I always ask the students, I ask them to, or challenge them to think about where their water comes from. Not just the faucet, but where does it come from? And I think really connecting with where your water comes from is really important. And also, where does it go when you're done with it? And so we have these conversations, and they really get kids thinking. And that's an important awareness that we need to encourage.
So from those very young, impressionable ages to the point where they might want to study international law, there's a lot of span in there. But the reality, Professor McCaffrey, is that international law around water is such an expanding field that University of the Pacific is just one place where classes have had to be added. Curriculum is important. And where are we going with this?
At McGeorge, which is the University of the Pacific's law school, we have actually a doctoral program in international water resources law, and we've had it for a number of years. That was born of the realization that, just as you say, this problem is becoming more global. More countries rely on shared water resources. We have this wild card of climate change, which is indeed changing a lot of things in the field of hydrology. So it's important to know the law as it's developed that governs the relations between countries sharing that water, but also to think ahead. And that's really what my talk later this week in Stockton will be trying to look into. That is, it's taken maybe a century to develop international water law to the point that it is now, but that was all based on a climate that was much different than we have now, but certainly than we'll have in the future. So is the law going to be equipped, and is the world going to be equipped to apply this legal regime that's developed in one climate scenario to a new scenario in this new era of climate change that some scientists are calling the Anthropocene, the age of the human, because we humans have changed the climate and Earth's systems so much. So that's going to be the challenge. I think the legal regime that's in place was fine for what we had. Is it okay for what we're going to have? That's, I think, the question that we should be dealing with and that students should be excited about, really.
The second part of the title of your presentation is that question, how do we survive a legacy of environmental dislocation and disruption? So put a pinpoint on one aspect of this conversation as you see it. Looking ahead, what's one area where we have to focus and think in a new or different way than we either have or are right now?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, what comes to mind immediately, perhaps because I'm a Californian, is something we're experiencing here, but it's being experienced all over the world. in the Brahmaputra basin, Ganges, all of South Asia depends on glacial melt and snow melt, just as we do here. Our largest reservoir in the state, we are fond of saying, is the Sierra snowpack. And yet, a lot of precipitation that used to fall as snow is now falling as rain. If it does fall as snow, it's melting faster. So is our infrastructure adequate to that? Do we have enough storage to deal with a lot of water that comes down at times that we're not used to? So that's, I think, a huge impact of climate change that we're already feeling. And that is going to result in shortages in parts of the world where the bulk of the Earth's population live, such as South Asia and East Asia. They all rely on water from the Himalayas that comes from glacial melt or snow melt, and that's going to be melting faster. And there probably, like in California, will be less snow.
Professor Camarillo, say something about this lecture series, because it is an ongoing series. It has been important to, of course, law students and college students, but this is a lecture that's free and open to the public on Thursday.
Yeah, that's right. So the lecture series is funded by George and Rosemary Shabangalis. They're both graduates of the University of the Pacific. And Professor Shabangalis was a professor at UC Davis for his whole career, and he's a worldwide expert in wastewater treatment and solid waste management and other aspects of environmental engineering. So he's a global expert in this field, and he really recognizes that we need to have these cross-disciplinary conversations where law students and lawyers are learning about technical topics, where engineers are learning about policy, where we're all seeing this issue from other sides and other perspectives. And so just as an example, our last lecture was on the human right to water, what you mentioned earlier. And in that case, you know, a lot of communities in California are being left behind. They just don't have the infrastructure or the funds to have a water system that's protective. And so in those cases, the policy is really important. And it's really important for our engineering students to see that.
The lecture is Thursday, January 24th, from 6 to 7:30 at the Alumni House.
That's correct, yes.
On campus. Mm-hmm. It's also going to be streamed on Facebook Live. And I want to end with one final question that I don't mean to sound trite or silly, but if there is one word about water that we should be keeping in our mind, maybe in the last few years, the two words have been Delta Tunnels, but I think you're asking us to think about it differently. So if we apply a new word that maybe I continue to repeat, others continue to repeat about water as we look at our future, what would that be?
Mary Kay may have a different perspective, but mine would be cooperation. Because, again, water is the quintessential shared natural resource. And if you and I are sharing something and we each have our hand on it, we have to cooperate. Otherwise, neither of us gets much out of it. So I don't know if Mary Kay...
I think that's great. Cooperation, also awareness, I think is important. As we have more people in the world and less water, less fresh water, we really have to be aware of it as a valuable resource.
Well, this is the first conversation of this type in the new year. Let's do this again this year, all right?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll post a link to the lecture on Thursday. So that is Stephen McCaffrey and Mary Kay Camarillo. They are from University of the Pacific in Stockton, and you can find those links. I'm almost there. There we go. At capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. Thank you.